gypsy, that I first heard of your return, that a battle hammer had taken back the halls. So here I be, me king, he said, dipping to one knee. Point me at your enemies. He gave Catti Bree a garish wink and poked a dirty, stubby finger toward the tip of his helmet spike. Most wild? Brunner asked, somewhat derisively. Always been, Fibbledorf replied. I'll call ye an escort, Brunner said, so ye can get yourself a bath and a meal. I'll take the meal, Puent replied. Keep your bath and your escort. I know me way around these old halls as well as yourself, Brunner Battlehammer. Better, I say, since ye was but a stubble-chinned dwarfling when we was pushed out. He put his hand out to pinch Brunner's chin, and had it promptly slapped away. His shrieking laughter like a hawk's cry, his armor squealing like talons on slate, the battle rager stomped away.
Pleasant sort, Catti Bree remarked.
Puent alive, Cobble mused.
And Catti Bree could not tell if that was good news or not.
You've never once mentioned that one, Catti Bree said to Brunner.
Trust me, girl, Brunner replied. That one's not worth mentioning.
Exhausted, the barbarian fell onto his cot and sought some needed sleep. He felt the dream returning before he had even closed his eyes. He bolted upright, not wanting to see again the images of his Catti Bree entwined with the likes of Drizzt Do'Urden. They came to him anyway. He saw a thousand sparkles. A million reflected fires, spiraling downward, inviting him along. Wulfgar growled defiantly and tried to stand. It took him several moments to realize that the attempt had been futile, that he was still on his cot, and that he was descending, following the undeniable trail of glittering sparkles, down to the images.
Chapter 9. Two Clean Cuts.
Goblins? Regis asked.
Drizzt bent low over one of the dwarven corpses, shaking his head even before he got close enough to fully inspect the wounds. Goblins would not likely have left the dwarves in this condition, the Drow Ranger knew, certainly not with all of their valuable armor and equipment intact. Besides, goblins never recovered the bodies of their own dead, yet the only kills in this corridor were dwarves. No matter how large the goblin force, and how great their advantage of surprise, Drizzt did not think it likely that they could have killed this sturdy party without a single loss. The wounds on the nearest dwarf seemed to confirm the drow's instincts. Slender and precise, these cuts were not made by crude, jagged goblin weapons. A fine edge, razor-sharp and probably enchanted, had sliced this particular dwarf's throat. The line was barely visible, even after Drizzt had wiped away the blood, but ultimately deadly.
"What killed them?"
Regis asked, growing impatient. He shifted about from foot to foot, moving the torch alternately from one hand to the other. Drizzt's mind refused to accept the obvious conclusion. How many times in his years in Menzo Berenzon, fighting beside his drow kin, had Drizzt Do'Urden witnessed wounds similar to these? No other race in all the realms, with the possible exception of the surface elves, used weapons so finely edged.
"What killed them?"
Regis asked again, a notable tremor in his voice. Drizzt shook his white locks. "I do not know," he replied honestly. He moved to the next body, this one slumped, half-sitting against the wall. Despite the abundance of blood, the only wound the drow found was a single, clean, diagonal slash along the right side of the unfortunate dwarf's throat, a cut paper-thin but very deep. "It could be Duergar," Drizzt said to Regis, referring to the evil race of grey dwarves.
The thought made sense, since Duergar had served as minions to Shimmergloom the dragon and had inhabited these halls until just a few months before, when Brunner's forces had chased them out. Still, Drizzt knew that his reasoning was based more in hope than in truth. Greedy Duergar would have stripped these victims clean, particularly of the valuable mining equipment, and Duergar, like mountain dwarves, favored heavier weapons, such as the battle axe. No such weapon had hit this dwarf.
"You don't believe that,"
Regis said behind him. Drizzt didn't turn to regard the halfling. Staying in a crouch, he shuffled over to the next unfortunate dwarf. Regis's voice fell away behind him, but Drizzt heard the halfling's last statement as clearly as he had ever heard anything in his life.
"You think Entreri did it?"
Drizzt did not think that. Did not think that any lone warrior, however skilled, could possibly have done such a complete and precise job. He glanced back at Regis, standing impassively under his upheld torch, his eyes searching Drizzt for some clue of a reaction. Drizzt thought the halfling's reasoning curious indeed, and the only explanation he could think of was that Regis was terribly frightened that Entreri had followed him out of Kalimport. Drizzt shook his head and turned back to his investigation. On the body of the third dwarf, he found a clue that narrowed the list of potential killers to one race. A tiny dart protruded from the body's side under its cloak. Drizzt had to take a steadying breath before he mustered the nerve to pull it out, for he recognized it, and it explained the ease with which these toughened dwarves had been slaughtered. The quarrel, made for a handheld crossbow, undoubtedly had been coated with sleep poison and was a favored missile of dark elves. Drizzt came up from his low crouch. His scimitars leaped into his slender hands. "We must leave this place," he whispered harshly.
"What is it?"
Regis asked. Drizzt, his keen senses attuned to the darkness farther along the corridor, did not answer. From somewhere back behind the halfling, Gwenevar issued a low growl. Drizzt eased one foot behind him and slid slowly backward, somehow understanding that any abrupt movement would trigger an attack. Dark elves in Mithril Hall. Of all the horrors Drizzt could think of, and in Faerûn these were countless, not one came near to the disaster of the drow.
"Which way?"
Regis whispered. Twinkle's blue light seemed to flare.
"Go," Drizzt cried, understanding the scimitar's warning.
He spun about and saw Regis for just a moment. Then the halfling disappeared under a ball of conjured darkness, the magic snuffing out the light of the halfling's torch in the blink of an eye. Drizzt rolled to the side of the corridor and spun back around behind the propped body of a dead dwarf. He closed his eyes, forcing them into the infrared spectrum, and felt the dwarf's body jerk slightly, once and then again. Drizzt knew it had been hit with quarrels. A black streak emerged from the globe of darkness behind him. The corridor brightened just a bit as Regis apparently went out the back side of the darkened area, his torch shedding some light around the edge of the unyielding globe. The halfling did not cry out, though. This surprised Drizzt and made him fear that Regis had been taken. Gwenevar padded by him and darted left, then right. A poison-coated quarrel skipped off the stone floor, inches from the panther's fast-moving paws. Another struck Gwenevar with a thud, but the cat hardly slowed. Drizzt saw the heated outlines of two slender forms many yards away, each with a single arm extended, as though they were again taking aim with their wicked weapons. Drizzt called upon his own innate magical abilities and dropped the globe of darkness into the corridor ahead of Gwenevar, offering some cover. Then he too was up and running, following the cat, hoping that Regis somehow had escaped. He went into his own area of darkness without slowing, sure-footed, remembering the layout of the corridor perfectly and deftly skipping over yet another dwarven body. When he emerged, Drizzt noticed the black mouth of a side passage to his left. Gwenevar had flown right past it and now was bearing down on the two drow forms, but Drizzt, trained in the tactics of the dark elves, knew in his heart that the side passage could not be clear. He heard a scuttling noise as of many hard-edged legs, and many fell back, stunned and afraid, as an eight-legged monstrosity, half-drow and half-arachnid, clambered around the bend, its legs catching hold with equal ease on both floor and wall. Twin axes waved ominously in its hands, which once had been the delicate hands of a drow. In all the wide world, there was nothing more repulsive to any dark elf, Drizdo Erden included, than a drider. Guinevar's roar, accompanied by the sounds of several clicking crossbows, brought Drizzt back to his senses in time to deflect the drider's first attack. The monster came straight in with its front legs raised and kicking to keep Drizzt off balance and launched its axes in a quick double chop at Drizzt's head. Drizzt spun back out of range of the legs in time to avoid the slicing axes, but instead of continuing his retreat, he hooked an arm on one spidery leg and rolled around it, rushing back in. Twinkle whipped across, blasting aside a second leg and giving Drizzt enough of an opening to slide down to his knees, right under the beast. The drider reared and hissed, both of its axes chopping at Drizzt's backside. Drizzt's other scimitar was already in place, though, leveled horizontally in back of his vulnerable neck. It deflected one axe harmlessly wide and caught the other where its head met its handle. Drizzt put his feet under him and turned sideways as he rose, both his blades turning point up. With his parrying scimitar, he continued the movement, twisting the trapped axe right over in the drider's hand, then tugging it free. With Twinkle, he thrust straight up, finding a ridge in the creature's armored exoskeleton and sinking the blade deep into spidery flesh. Hot fluids gushed over Drizzt's arm. The drider shrieked in agony and twitched violently. Legs buffeted Drizzt from every side. He nearly lost his grip on Twinkle and had to pull the blade out to keep hold of it. Through his prison bars of spider legs, Drizzt noticed more dark forms emerging from the side corridor. Drow elves, he knew, each with one arm extended his way. He spun frantically as the first one fired. His thick cloak luckily floated out behind him and caught the quarrel harmlessly in its heavy folds. When he ended his desperate maneuver, though, Drizzt found that he was half out from under the drider, and the creature had turned about enough to line him up with its remaining axe. Even worse, the second drow had him solidly targeted in crossbow sights. The axe came down curiously, flat end leading, Drizzt noted, forcing Drizzt to parry. He expected to hear the click of a firing crossbow, but Drizzt heard instead a muffled groan as 600 pounds of Black Panther buried his dark elf attacker. Drizzt slapped the axe aside with one blade, then the other, buying himself enough time to get out the rest of the way. He came up, instinctively spinning away from the drider, just in time to get his weapons up to block a sword thrust from the closest drow enemy. "Drop your weapons and it will go easier on you," the drow, holding two fine swords, cried in a language that Drizzt had not heard in more than a decade. A language that sent images of beautiful, twisted, terrible Menzo Barons on flowing back into his mind. How many times had Zachnafane, his father, stood before him, similarly armed, awaiting their inevitable sparring tournament? A growl that he was not even cognizant of escaped Drizzt's lips. He went into a series of offensive combinations that left his opponent dazzled and off balance in a split second. A scimitar came in low to the side, the second came in high, straight ahead, and the first chopped in again, angled downward at shoulder level. The enemy's drow eyes widened as if he had suddenly realized his doom. Guinevar shot by them both, hit the drider full on, and went tumbling in a black ball of raking claws and flailing spider legs. More dark elves were coming, Drizzt knew, from farther ahead and from the side passage. Drizzt's fury did not relent. Twinkle and his other blade worked fiercely, preventing the other drow from beginning an offensive counter. He found an opening level with the drow's neck, but had no heart for a kill. This was no goblin he faced, but a drow, one of his own race, one like Zachnafane, perhaps. Drizzt remembered a vow he had made when he had left the dark elf city. Ignoring the opening for the drow's neck, he whipped his blade low instead, banging one of his opponent's swords. Twinkle followed the attack immediately, slamming at the same sword, then Drizzt's first blade whipped back the other way, hitting the weapon on the opposite side and sending the battered thing flying away. Evil drow fell back, then came in low, hoping to counter quickly enough with his remaining sword to push Drizzt back, that he might recover his lost weapon. A blinding backhand from Twinkle sent that remaining sword flying out wide, and Drizzt, never doubting the effectiveness of his strike, was moving forward before Twinkle ever connected. He could have hit the drow anywhere he chose, including a dozen critical areas. But Drizzt O'Erden recalled again the vow he had made when he had left Menzo Berenzon, a promise to himself and a justification of his departure, that he would never again take the life of one of his people. His scimitar jabbed downward, angling in above his opponent's kneecap. The evil drow howled and fell back, rolling to the stone and grasping at his torn joint. Guinevar was under the standing drider, the muscles of the panther's flank exposed from under a loose-hanging piece of the cat's black-furred skin. "Go, Guinevar!" Drizzt shouted as he ran along the wall, leaping wildly, hacking away into the jumble of drider legs on that side. He heard the monstrosity shriek again as a scimitar blasted deep into one leg, nearly severing it, and then he tumbled free out the backside. Guinevar took another axe hit, but did not respond, did not follow Drizzt or counter the attack. "Guinevar!" Drizzt called, and the panther's head turned slowly to regard him. Drizzt understood the panther's delay when Guinevar flinched several more times from continued crossbow hits. Drizzt's instincts told him to send the panther away before any more punishment could be leveled upon it, but he did not have the figurine. "Guinevar!" he cried again, seeing many forms closing quickly from behind the drider. Truly torn, Drizzt decided to rush back in and fight beside the panther to the bitter end. The eight-legged creature hissed victoriously as its axe lined up for a stroke on the helpless and quivering panther's neck. Down came the blade, but it hit only in substantial mist, and the drider's cry turned to one of frustration. "Come on!" Drizzt heard Regis say behind him. The ranger understood then and was relieved. But then the drider turned on him fully, and for the first time, with the torchlight, returned to the area of the tunnel. Drizzt got a good look at the creature's unnervingly familiar face. He had not the time to stop to consider it, though. He swept about, exaggerating the movement to send his cloak flying wide, and it took yet another quarrel that had been diving for his back and rushed away. The corridor darkened immediately, then lightened a bit, then darkened again as Regis went into and through the two globes of darkness. Drizzt dove to the side as soon as he went into the cover of his own globe, and he heard a quarrel skip off the stone not far away. In full stride, he caught Regis just behind the second globe, and the two flew past the dwarven bodies, cut around the bend in the corridor, and kept on running, Drizzt leading the way. Chapter 10. In the Facets of a Wondrous Gem. Regis and Drizzt pulled up in a small side chamber, its ceiling relatively clear of the persistent stalactites common in this region of caves, and its entryway low and defensible.
"Should I put out the torch?"
the halfling asked. He stood behind Drizzt as the drow crouched in front of the doorway, listening for sounds of movements in the main tunnel beyond. Drizzt thought for a long moment, then shook his head, knowing that it really did not matter, that he and Regis had no chance of escaping these tunnels without further confrontation. Soon after they had fled the battle, Drizzt discovered other enemies paralleling them down side corridors. He knew the dark elf hunting techniques well enough to understand that the trap would not be set with any obvious openings. "I fight better in the light than my kin, I would guess," Drizzt reasoned.
"At least it wasn't in Treri,"
Regis said lightly. And Drizzt thought the reference to the assassin a strange thing indeed. Would that it were Artemis and Treri, the drow mused. At least then he and Regis would not be surrounded by a horde of drow warriors.
"You did well in dismissing Guinevar," Drizzt remarked.
"Would the panther have died?"
Regis asked. Drizzt honestly did not know the answer. But he did not believe that Guinevar had been in any mortal peril. He had seen the panther dragged into the stone by a creature of the elemental plane of earth and plunged into a magically created lake of pure acid. Both times the panther had returned to him, and eventually all of Guinevar's wounds had healed. "If the drow and the drider had been allowed to continue," he added, "it is likely that Guinevar would have needed more time to mend wounds on the astral plane. I do not believe the panther can be killed away from its home, however. Not as long as the figurine survives. Drizzt looked back to Regis, sincere gratitude on his handsome face. You did well in sending Guinevere away, though, for certainly the panther was suffering at the hands of our enemies.
I'm glad Guinevere would not die,
Regis commented, as Drizzt looked back to the entryway.
It would not do to lose so valuable a magical item.
Nothing Regis had said since his return from Kalimport, nothing Regis had ever said to Drizzt seemed so very out of place. No, it went further than that, Drizzt decided as he crouched there, stunned by his halfling companion's callous remark. Guinevere and Regis had been more than companions, had been friends for many years. Regis would never refer to Guinevere as a magical item. Suddenly, it all began to make sense to the dark elf. The halfling's references to Artemis and Treri now, back with the dead dwarves, and back when they had talked of what had happened in Kalimport after Drizzt's departure. Now Drizzt understood the eager way in which Regis measured his responses to remarks about the assassin. And Drizzt understood the viciousness of his fight with Wulfgar. Hadn't the barbarian mentioned that it was Regis who had told him about Drizzt's meeting with Catti Bree outside Mithril Hall? What else did you tell Wulfgar? Drizzt asked, not turning around, not flinching in the least. What else did you convince him of with that ruby pendant that hangs about your neck? The little mace skipped noiselessly across the floor beside the drow, coming to rest several feet to the front and side of him. Then came another item, a mask that Drizzt himself had worn on his journey to the Southern Empires, a mask that had allowed Drizzt to alter his appearance to that of a surface elf. Wulfgar eyed the outrageous dwarf curiously, not quite sure what to make of this unorthodox battle rager. Brunner had introduced Puente to the barbarian just a minute before, and Wulfgar had gotten the distinct impression that Brunner wasn't overly fond of the black-bearded, smelly dwarf. The dwarf king, to take his seat between Cobble and Catti Bree, had then rushed across the audience hall, leaving Wulfgar awkwardly standing by the door. Thibbledorf Puente, though, seemed perfectly at ease. "You are a warrior, then?" Wulfgar asked politely, hoping to find some common ground. Puente's burst of laughter mocked him. "Warrior!" the bawdy dwarf bellowed. "You mean one who's for fighting with honor?" Wulfgar shrugged, having no idea of where Puente was leading. "Is yourself a warrior, big boy?" Puente asked. Wulfgar puffed out his great chest. "I am Wulfgar, son of Beornigar," he began somberly. "I thinked as much," Puente called across the room to the others. "And if ye was fighting another, and he tripped on his way in and dropped his weapon, ye'd stand back and let him pick it up, knowing that ye'd win the fight anyway," Puente reasoned. Wulfgar shrugged, the answer obvious. "Ye realize Puente will surely insult the boy," Cobble, leaning on the arm of Brunner's chair, whispered to the dwarf king. "Gold against silver on the boy, then," Brunner offered quietly. "Puente's good and wild, but he ain't got the strength to handle that one." "Not a bet I'd take," Cobble replied. "But if Wulfgar lifts a hand against that one, he's to get stung, not to doubt."
"Good,"
Catti Bree put in unexpectedly. Both Brunner and Cobble turned incredulous looks on the young woman.
"Wulfgar's needing some stinking," she explained with uncharacteristic callousness.
"Well, there ye have it, then,"
Puente roared in Wulfgar's face, leading the barbarian across the room as he spoke.
"If I was fighting anyone, if I was fighting yourself, and ye dropped your weapon, I'd let ye bend and pick it up."
Wulfgar nodded in agreement, but jumped back as Puente snapped his dirty fingers right under Wulfgar's nose.
"And then I'd put me spike right through the top of your thick head,"
the battle rager finished.
"I ain't no damned stupid warrior, you darned fool. I'm a battle rager, the battle rager. And don't ye ever forget that Puente plays to win."
He snapped his fingers again Wolfgar's way, then stormed past the stunned barbarian, stomping over to stand before Brunner.
"You got some outrageous friends, but I'm not surprised,"
Pwent roared at Brunner. He regarded Catty Bree with his broken-toothed smile.
"But your girl'd be a cute one if ye could find a way to put some hair on her chin."
"Take it as a compliment,"
Cobble quietly offered to Catty Bree, who only shrugged and smiled with amusement.
"Battlehammers always keep a soft spot in their hearts for them that wasn't dwarfkin,"
Pwent went on, directing his remarks at Wolfgar as the tall man moved beside him.
"And we let 'em be our kings anyway. Never could figure that part out."
Brunner's knuckles whitened under the strain as he grabbed hard on the arms of his chair, trying to control himself. Catty Bree dropped a hand over his, and when he looked at her tolerant eyes, the storm quickly passed.
"Speaking of that," Pwent went on, "there's an ugly rumor making the rounds that ye've got a drow elf standing beside ye. There be any truth of that?"
Brunner's first reaction was one of anger. Always the dwarf had been defensive about his oft-maligned drow friend. Catty Bree spoke first, though, her words directed more to her father than to Pwent, a reminder to Brunner that Drizzt's skin had thickened and that he could take care of himself.
"He'll be meeting the drow soon enough," she told the battle rager. "Sure, and that one's a warrior to fit your description, if ever there was one."
Pwent roared in derisive laughter, but it faded as Catty Bree continued.
"If you came at him to start a fight, but dropped your pointy helm, he'd pick it up for ye and put it back on your head,"
she explained.
"Of course, then he'd take it back off and stuff it down the back of your pants and give ye a few boots, just so ye get the point."
The battle rager's lips seemed to tie themselves up in a neat knot. For the first time in many days, Wolfgar seemed to approve completely of Catty Bree's reasoning, and the nod of his head, and of Brunner's and of Cobble's, was certainly appreciative when Pwent made no move to answer.
"How long will Drizzt be gone?"
the barbarian asked, to change the subject before Pwent could find his irritating voice.
"The tunnels are long,"
Brunner replied.
"He will return for the ceremony?"
Wolfgar asked, and there seemed to Catty Bree to be some ambivalence in his tone, an uncertainty of which answer he would prefer.
"Be sure that he will,"
the young woman put in evenly.
"For be sure that there'll be no wedding until Drizzt is back from the tunnels."
She looked at Brunner, thoroughly squashing his protests before he ever uttered them.
"And I'm not for caring if all the kings and queens of the North are kept waiting a month."
Wolfgar seemed on the verge of an explosion, but he was wise enough to direct his mounting anger away from volatile Catty Bree.
"I should have gone with him," he growled at Brunner. "Why did you send Regis along? What good might the halfling do if enemies are found?"
The ferocity of the lad's tone caught Brunner off his guard.
"He's right,"
Catty Bree snapped in her father's ear. Not that she wanted to agree with Wolfgar on any point, but that she, like Wolfgar, saw the opportunity to vent her anger openly. Brunner sat back in his chair, his dark eyes darting from one to the other.
"Dwarves are lost is all," he said.
"Even if that is true, what will Regis do but slow down the drow?"
Catty Bree reasoned.
"He said he'd find a way to fit in,"
Brunner protested.
"Who said?"
Catty Bree demanded.
"Rumblebelly,"
shouted her flustered father.
"He did not even wish to go,"
Wolfgar shot back.
"Dead too," Brunner roared, leaping up from his seat and pushing the leaning Wolfgar back two steps with a sturdy forearm slam to the lad's chest. "'Twas Rumblebelly that telled me to send him along with a drow, I tell ye."
"Regis was here with yourself when ye got the news of the missing dwarves," Catty Bree reasoned. "Ye didn't say a thing about Regis telling ye to send him."
"He telled me before that," Brunner answered. "He telled—"
The dwarf stopped, realizing the illogic of it all. Somehow, somewhere in the back of his mind, he remembered Regis explaining that he and Drizzt should go after the missing dwarves. But how could that be, since Brunner had made the decision as soon as they all learned that dwarves were missing?
"Have ye been tasting the holy water again, me king?"
Cobble asked respectfully but firmly. Brunner held his hand out, motioning for them all to be quiet while he sought his recollections. He remembered Regis's words distinctly, and knew he was not imagining them. But no images accompanied the memory, no scene where he could place the halfling and thus straighten out the apparent time discrepancy. Then an image came to Brunner, a swirling array of shining facets, spiraling down and drawing him with them into the depths of a wondrous ruby.
"Brumblebelly told me that the dwarves had been missing,"
Brunner said slowly and clearly. His eyes closed as he forced the memory from his subconscious.
"He told me I should send himself and Driz to find them, that them two alone had get me dwarves back to the hall safely." "Regis could not have known,"
Cobble reasoned, obviously doubting Brunner's words.
"And even if he did, the little one would not have wished to go along to find them,"
Wulfgar added, equally doubtful.
"Is this a dream?" "Not a dream," Brunner growled. "He told me, with that ruby of his."
Brunner's face screwed up as he tried to remember, tried to call upon his dwarven resistance to magic to fight past the stubborn mental block.
"Regis would not,"
Wulfgar started to say again. But this time it was Catti Bree, knowing the truth of her father's claims, who interrupted him.
"Unless it wasn't really Regis,"
she offered. And her own words made her mouth drop open with their terrible implications. The three had been through much beside Drizzt, and they all knew well that the drow had many evil and powerful enemies, one in particular who would have the wiles to create such an elaborate deception. Wulfgar looked equally stricken, at a loss, but Brunner was fast to react. He jumped down from the throne and blasted between Wulfgar and Puent, nearly knocking them both from their feet. Catti Bree went right behind, Wulfgar turning to follow.
"What in the head of a goblin are them three talking about?"
Puent demanded of Cobble as the cleric too rambled past.
"A fight,"
Cobble replied, knowing well how to deflect any of Puent's demands for a lengthy explanation. Thibbledorf Puent dropped to one knee and rolled his burly shoulder, punching his fist triumphantly out in front of him.
"Yah!" he cried in glee. "Sure, and it's good to be back serving a battle hammer!"
"Are you in league with them? Or is this all a terrible coincidence?"
Drizzt asked dryly, still refusing to turn about and give Artemis and Treri the satisfaction of viewing his torment.
"I do not believe in coincidence," came the predictable answer.
Finally, Drizzt did turn around to see his dreaded rival, the human assassin Artemis Entreri, standing easily at the ready, fine sword in one hand, jeweled dagger in the other. The torch, still burning, lay at his feet. The magical transformation from halfling to human had been complete, clothing included, and this fact somewhat confused Drizzt. When Drizzt had used the mask, it had done no more than alter the color of his skin and hair, and his amazement now was obvious on his face.
"You should better learn the value of magical items before you so casually toss them aside," the assassin said to him, understanding the look. There was a note of truth in Entreri's words, apparently, but Drizzt had never regretted leaving the magical mask in Kalimport. Under its protective camouflage, the dark elf had walked freely, without persecution, among the other races. But under that mask, Drizzt O'Urden had walked in a lie.
"You could have killed me in the goblin fight, or 100 other times since your return to Mithril Hall," Drizzt reasoned. "Why the elaborate games? The sweeter comes my victory." "You wish me to draw my weapons, to continue the fight we began in Kalimport sewers."
"Our fight began long before there, Drizzt O'Urden," the assassin chided.
He casually poked his blade at Drizzt, who neither flinched nor reached for his scimitars as the fine sword nicked him on the cheek.
"You and I," Entreri continued, and he began to circle to Drizzt's side, "have been mortal enemies from the day we learned of each other, each an insult to the other's code of fighting. I mock your principles, and you insult my discipline."
"Discipline and emptiness are not the same," Drizzt answered. "You are but a shell that knows how to use weapons. There is no substance in that."
"Good," Entreri purred, tapping Drizzt's hip with his sword. "I feel your anger, Drow, though you try so desperately to hide it. Draw your weapons and let it loose. Teach me with your skills what your words cannot." "You still do not understand," Drizzt replied calmly, his head cocked to the side and a smug, sincere grin widening on his face. "I would not presume to teach you anything. Artemis Entreri is not worth my time." Entreri's eyes flared in sudden rage, and he leaped forward, sword high, as if to strike Drizzt down. Drizzt didn't flinch. "Draw your weapons, and let us continue our destiny," Entreri growled, falling back and leveling his sword at the drow's eye level.
"Fall on your own blade and meet the only end you'll ever deserve," Drizzt replied.
"I have your cat," Entreri snapped. "You must fight me, or Gwenevar will be mine."
"You forget that we are both soon to be captured or killed," Drizzt reasoned. "Do not underestimate the hunting skills of my people."
"Then fight for the halfling," Entreri growled.
Drizzt's expression showed that the assassin had hit a nerve.
"Had you forgotten about Regis?" Entreri teased. "I have not killed him, but he will die where he is, and only I know of that place. I will tell you only if you win. Fight, Drizzt O'Erden, if for no better reason than to save the life of that miserable halfling."
Entreri's sword made a lazy thrust at Drizzt's face again, but this time it went flying wide to the side as a scimitar leaped out and banged it away. Entreri sent it right back in and followed it closely with a dagger strike that nearly found a hole in Drizzt's defenses.
"I thought you had lost the use of an arm and an eye," the drow said.
"I lied," Entreri replied, stepping back and holding his weapons out wide.
"Must I be punished?"
Drizzt let his scimitars answer for him, rushing in quickly and chopping repeatedly, left and right, then right a third time, as his left blade twirled up above his head and came straight ahead in a blinding thrust. Sword and dagger countering, the assassin batted aside each attack. The fight became a dance, movements too synchronous, too much in perfect harmony for either to gain an advantage. Drizzt, knowing that time was running out for him, and more particularly for Regis, maneuvered near the low-burning torch, then stomped down on it, rolling it about and smothering the flames, stealing the light. He thought his racial night vision would gain him the edge, but when he looked at Entreri, he saw the assassin's eyes glowing in the telltale red of infravision.
"You thought the mask gave me this ability?" Entreri reasoned.
"Not true, you see. It was a gift from my dark elf associate, a mercenary, not so unlike myself."
His words ended at the beginning of his charge, his sword coming high and forcing Drizzt to twist and duck to the side. Drizzt grinned in satisfaction as Twinkle came up, the scimitar ringing as it knocked Entreri's dagger aside. A subtle twist put Drizzt back on the offensive, Twinkle coming around Entreri's dagger hand and slicing at the assassin's exposed chest. Entreri already had begun to roll straight backward, and the blade never got close. In the dim light of Twinkle's glow, their skin colors lost in a common gray, they seemed alike, brethren come from the same mold. Entreri approved of that perception, but Drizzt surely did not. To the renegade drow, Artemis Entreri seemed a dark mirror of his soul, an image of what he might have become had he remained in Menzo Baranzon beside his amoral kin. Drizzt's rage led him now in another series of dazzling thrusts and cunning, sweeping cuts, his curved blades weaving tight lines about each other, hitting at Entreri from a different angle with every attack. Sword and dagger played equally well, blocking and returning cunning counters, then blocking the countering counters that the assassin seemed to anticipate with ease. Drizzt could fight him forever, would never tire with Entreri standing opposite him. But then he felt a sting in his calf and a burning, then numbing sensation emanating throughout his leg. In seconds, he felt his reflexes slowing. He wanted to shout out the truth, to steal the moment of Entreri's victory, for surely the assassin, who so desired to beat Drizzt in honest combat, would not appreciate a win brought on by the poisoned quarrel of hidden allies. Twinkle's tip dipped to the floor, and Drizzt realized he was dangerously vulnerable. Entreri fell first, similarly poisoned. Drizzt sensed the dark shapes slipping in through the low door, and wondered if he had time to bash in the fallen assassin's skull before he, too, slumped to the ground. He heard one of his own blades, then the other clang to the floor. But he was not aware that he had dropped them. Then he was down, his eyes closed, his dimming consciousness trying to fathom the extent of this disaster, the many implications for his friends and for him. His thoughts were not eased with the last words he heard. A voice in the Drow language. A voice from somewhere in his past.
Sleep well, my lost brother.
Part 3. Legacy. What dangerous paths I have trod in my life. What crooked ways these feet have walked, in my homeland, in the tunnels of the Underdark, across the surface Northland, and even in the course of following my friends. I shake my head in wonderment. Is every corner of the wide world possessed of people so self-absorbed that they cannot let others cross the paths of their lives? People so filled with hatred that they must take up chase and vindicate themselves against perceived wrongs, even if those wrongs were no more than an honest defense against their own encroaching evils? I left Artemis Entreri in Kalimport, left him there in body and with my taste for vengeance rightfully sated. Our paths had crossed and separated, to the betterment of us both. Entreri had no practical reason to pursue me, had nothing to gain in finding me but the possible redemption of his injured pride. What a fool he is! He has found perfection of the body, has honed his fighting skills as perfectly as any I have known. But his need to pursue reveals his weakness. As we uncover the mysteries of the body, so too must we unravel the harmonies of the soul. But Artemis Entreri, for all his physical prowess, will never know what songs his spirit might sing. Always will he listen jealously for the harmonies of others, absorbed with bringing down anything that threatens his craven superiority. So much like my people is he, and so much like many others I have met of varied races, barbarian warlords, whose positions of power hinge on their ability to wage war on enemies who are not enemies. Dwarf kings who hoard riches beyond imagination, while when sharing but a pittance of their treasures, could better the lives of all those around them, and in turn allow them to take down their ever-present military defenses and throw away their consuming paranoia. Haughty elves, who avert their eyes to the sufferings of any who are not elven, feeling that the lesser races somehow brought their pains onto themselves. I have run from these people, passed these people by, and heard countless stories of them from travelers of every known land. And I know now that I must battle them, not with blade or army, but by remaining true to what I know in my heart is the rightful course of harmony. By the grace of the gods, I am not alone. Since Brunner regained his throne, the neighboring peoples take hope in his promises that the dwarven treasures of Mithril Hall will better all the region. Caddybri's devotion to her principles is no less than my own, and Wulfgar has shown his warrior people the better way of friendship, the way of harmony. They are my armor, my hope, in what is to come for me and for all the world. And as the lost chasers such as Entreri inevitably find their paths linked once more with my own, I remember Zacnaphane, kindred of blood and soul. I remember Montolio, and take heart that there are others who know the truth, that if I am destroyed, my ideals will not die with me. Because of the friends I have known, the honorable people I have met, I know I am no solitary hero of unique causes. I know that when I die, that which is important will live on. This is my legacy. By the grace of the gods, I am not alone. Drizzt Do'Urden. Chapter 11. Family Business. Clothing flew wildly, bric-a-brac smashed against the wall across the room, assorted weapons spun up into the air and twirled back down, some bouncing off Brunner's back. The dwarf, top half buried in his private locker, felt none of it, didn't even grunt when, as he rose for a moment, the flat side of a throwing axe struck and dislodged his one-horned helmet. "It's in here," the dwarf growled stubbornly, and a half-completed suit of chainmail whipped over his shoulder, nearly clobbering the others in the room. "By Moradin, the damn thing's got to be in here!" "What in the nine?" Thibbledorf Puent began, but Brunner's ecstatic cry cut him short. "I knowed it!" the red-bearded dwarf proclaimed, spinning up and turning away from the dismantled chest. In his hand he held a small, heart-shaped locket on a golden chain. Caddybri recognized it instantly as the magical gift Lady Illustrial of Silvery Moon had given Brunner, that he might find his friends who had gone into the Southland. Inside the locket was a tiny portrait of Drizzt, and the item was attuned to the drow, would give its possessor general information about Drizzt Do'Urden's whereabouts.
"This'll lead us to the elf," Brunner proclaimed,
holding the locket up high before him.
"Then give it over me, king," said Puent, "and let me find this strange friend of yours."
"I can work it well enough," Brunner growled in reply, replacing his one-horned helm atop his head and taking up his many-notched axe and golden shield.
"You're king of Mithril Hall," Puent protested. "You cannot be running off into the danger of unknown tunnels."
Caddybri ripped off an answer before Brunner got the chance.
"Shut your mouth, battle rager," the young woman insisted. "Me dad'd throw the halls to the goblins afore he'd be letting Drizzt stay in trouble."
Cobble grabbed Puent's shoulder and got a nasty cut on one finger from the many-ridged armor in the process to confirm the woman's observation and silently warn the wild battle rager not to press this point. Brunner wouldn't have listened to any arguments anyway. The red-bearded dwarf king fires a glow in his dark eyes, again blasted past Puent and Wulfgar, and led the charge out of the room. The image came into focus slowly, surrealistically, and by the time Drizzt Do'Urden fully awakened, he clearly recognized his sister Vierna, bending low to regard him.
"Purple eyes,"
the priestess said in the drow tongue. A sense that he had played out this identical scene 100 times in his youth nearly overwhelmed the trapped dark elf. Vierna, the only member of his family that Drizzt had ever cared for, besides the dead Zacnaphane, stood before him now. She had been Drizzt's ween mother, assigned to bring him, as a prince of House Do'Urden, into the dark ways of drow society. But thinking back to those distant memories, to times of which he had few, if any, recollections, Drizzt knew there was something different about Vierna, some underlying tenderness buried beneath the wicked robes of a priestess of the Spider Queen.
How long has it been, my lost brother?
Vierna asked, still using the language of the Dark Elves.
Nearly 3 decades? And how far you have come, and yet so close again to where you began, and where you belong.
Drizzt steeled his gaze, but had no practical retort. Not with his hands bound behind him, and a dozen drow soldiers milling about the small chamber. And Treri was there too, talking to a most curious dark elf who wore an outrageously plumed hat and a short, open-front vest that showed the rippling muscles of his slender stomach. The assassin had the magical mask tied to his belt, and Drizzt feared the mischief Treri might cause if he were allowed to return to Mithril Hall.
What will you think when you walk again into Menzo Berenzon?
Vierna asked Drizzt. And though the question was again rhetorical, it drew his attention fully back to her.
I will think as a prisoner thinks, Drizzt replied. And when I am brought before wicked Malice.
Matron Malice,
Vierna hissed. Malice, Drizzt repeated defiantly. And Vierna slapped him hard across the face. Several dark elves turned to regard the incident, then gave quiet chuckles and went back to their conversations. Vierna, too, erupted in laughter, long and wild. She threw her head back, her flowing white tresses flipping back from her face. Drizzt regarded her silently, having no idea of what had precipitated the explosive reaction.
Matron Malice is dead, you fool!
Vierna said suddenly, snapping her head forward to within an inch of Drizzt's face. Drizzt did not know how to react. He had just been told that his mother was dead, and he had no idea of how the information should affect him. He felt a sadness, distantly, but dismissed it, understanding that it came from a sense of never knowing a mother, not from the loss of Malice Doerden. As he settled back, digesting the news, Drizzt came to feel a calmness, an acceptance that brought not an ounce of grief. Malice was his natural parent, never his mother, and by all of Drizzt Doerden's estimation, her death was not a bad thing.
You do not even know, do you?
Vierna laughed at him.
How long you have been gone, lost one!
Drizzt cocked a curious eye, suspecting that some further, even greater revelation was yet to be spoken.
By your own actions, House Doerden was destroyed, and you do not even know!
Vierna cackled hysterically. Destroyed? Drizzt asked, surprised but, again, not overly concerned. In truth, the renegade drow felt no more for his own house than for any other in Menzo Berenzon. In truth, Drizzt felt nothing at all.
Matron Malice was charged with finding you,
Vierna explained.
When she could not, when you slipped through her grasp, so too did the favor of Lolf.
A pity,
Drizzt interjected, his voice dripping with sarcasm. Vierna hit him again, harder, but he held firm to his stoic discipline and did not blink. Vierna spun away from him, clenched her delicate but deceptively strong hands in front of her, and found breath hard to come by.
Destroyed,
she said again, suddenly obviously pained.
Taken down by the will of the Spider Queen. They are dead because of you,
she cried, spinning back at Drizzt and pointing accusingly.
Your sisters, Breeza and Maya, and your mother, all the house, Drizzt Doerden, dead because of you.
Drizzt gave no outward expression. An accurate reflection of his absence of feelings for the incredible news Vierna had just thrown at him. And what of our brother, he asked. More to discern information about this raiding force than for any sincere cares about Deenan's well-deserved demise.
Why, Drizzt?
Vierna said with obviously feigned confusion.
You have met him yourself. You nearly took one of his legs.
Driss's confusion was genuine, until Vierna finished the thought.
One of his 8 legs.
Again. Drizzt managed to keep his features expressionless, but the stunning information that Deenan had become a Drider certainly had caught him by surprise.
"Again the blame is yours," Vierna snarled,
and she watched him for a long moment, her smile gradually fading as he did not react.
"Zaknafane died for you,"
Vierna cried suddenly, and though Drizzt knew she had said it only to evoke a reaction, this time he could not remain calm.
"No!"
he shouted back in rage, lurching forward from the floor, only to be easily pushed back to his seat. Vierna smiled evilly, knowing she had found Drizzt's weak spot.
"Were it not for the sins of Drizzt O'Erden, Zaknafane would live still," she prodded. "House O'Erden would have known its highest glories, and Matron Malice would sit upon the ruling council."
"Sins?" Drizzt spat back, finding his courage against the painful memories of his lost father.
"Glories?"
he asked.
"You confuse the two."
Vierna's hand shot up as though to lash out again, but when Stoic Drizzt did not flinch, she lowered it.
"In the name of your wretched deity, you revel in the evilness of the drow world,"
the indomitable Drizzt went on.
"Zaknafane died, no, was murdered, in pursuit of false ideals. You cannot convince me to accept the blame. Was it Vierna who held the sacrificial dagger?"
The priestess seemed on the verge of an explosion, her eyes glowing intensely and her face flushed hot to Drizzt's heat-seeing eyes.
"He was your father, too," Drizzt said to her, and she winced in spite of her efforts to sustain her rage.
It was true enough. Zaknafane had sired 2, and only 2 children with Malice.
"But you do not care about that,"
Drizzt reasoned immediately.
"Zaknafane was just a male, after all, and males do not count in the world of the drow."
"But he was your father," Drizzt had to add, "and he gave to you more than you will ever accept."
"Silence!"
Vierna snarled through gnashing teeth. She slapped Drizzt again, several times in rapid succession. He could feel the warmth of his own blood oozing down his face. Drizzt remained quiet for the moment, caught in private reflections of Vierna and of the monster she had become. She now seemed more akin to Breeza, Drizzt's oldest and most vicious sister, caught up in the frenzy that the Spider Queen always seemed ready to promote. Where was the Vierna that had secretly shown mercy to young Drizzt? Where was the Vierna who went along with the dark ways, as did Zaknafane, but never seemed to fully accept what Lolth had to offer? Where was Zaknafane's daughter? She was dead and buried, Drizzt decided, as he regarded that heat-flushed face, buried beneath the lies and the empty promises of twisted glory that perverted everything about the dark world of the drow.
"I will redeem you,"
Vierna said, calm again, the heat gradually leaving her delicate, beautiful face.
"More wicked ones than you have tried," Drizzt replied, misunderstanding her intent.
Vierna's ensuing laughter revealed that she recognized the error of his conclusions.
"I will give you to Lolth," the priestess explained, "and I will accept in return more power than even ambitious Matron Malice ever hoped for. Be of cheer, my lost brother, and know that you will restore to House O'Erden more prestige and power than it ever before knew."
"Power that will wane,"
Drizzt replied calmly, and his tone angered Vierna more than his insightful words.
"Power that will raise the house to another precipice, so that another house, finding the favor of Lolth, might push O'Erden down once more."
Vierna's smile widened.
"You cannot deny it,"
Drizzt snarled at her. And it was he who now faltered in the war of words, he who found his logic, however sound, to be inadequate.
"There is no constancy, no permanence in Menzo Oberynzon beyond the Spider Queen's latest whim."
"Good, my lost brother,"
Vierna purred.
"Lolth is a damned thing."
Vierna nodded.
"Your sacrilege cannot harm me any more,"
the priestess explained, her tone deathly calm.
for you are not of me any more. You are nothing more than a houseless rogue, whom Lolf has deemed suitable for sacrifice. So do continue to spit your curses at the Spider Queen, the Erna went on. Do show Lolf how proper this sacrifice will be, how ironic it is, for if you repented your ways, if you came back to the truth of your heritage, then you would defeat me.
Drizzt bit his lip, realizing that he would do well to hold his silence until he better fathomed the depth of this unexpected meeting.
Do you not understand? Vierna asked him. Merciful Lolf would welcome back your skilled sword, and my sacrifice would be no more. Thus would I live as an outcast, like you, a houseless rogue.
You do not fear to tell me this? Drizzt asked her coyly. Vierna understood her renegade brother better than he believed.
You will not repent, foolish, honorable Drizzt O'Erden, she replied. You would not utter such a lie, would not proclaim your fealty to the Spider Queen, even to save your very life. What useless commodities are these ideals you hold so precious?
Vierna slapped him one more time, for no particular reason that Drizzt could discern, and she twirled away, her hot form blurred by the shielding flow of her clerical robes. How fitting that image seemed to Drizzt, that the true outline of his sister should be hidden beneath the garments of the perverting Spider Queen. The curious-looking drow that had been conversing with Entreri walked over to Drizzt then, his high boots clacking loudly on the stone. He gave Drizzt an almost sympathetic look, then shrugged. "A pity," he remarked, as he produced the glowing twinkle from under the folds of his shimmering cape. "A pity," he said again, and he walked away, this time his boots making not a whisper of sound.
The amazed guards snapped to rigid attention when their king unexpectedly entered their chamber, accompanied by his daughter, Wulfgar Cobble, and a strangely armored dwarf that they did not know. "You heard from the drow?" Brunner asked the guards, the dwarf king going straight for the heavy bar on the stone door as he spoke. Their silence told Brunner all he needed to know. "Get to General Dagna," he instructed one of the guardsmen. "Tell him to gather together a war party and get down the new tunnels." The dwarven guard obediently kicked up his heels and darted away. Brunner's four companions came beside him as the bar clanged to the stone, Wulfgar and Cobble bearing blazing torches. "Three, then two is the drow's signal," the remaining guard explained to Brunner. "Three, then two it is," Brunner replied, and he disappeared into the gloom, forcing the others, particularly Thibbledorf, who still did not think it a good idea that the King of Mithril Hall was even down there, to scamper quickly just to keep pace. Cobble and even Hardy Puent glanced back and grimaced as the stone door slammed shut, while the other three, bent forward with the weight of their fears for their missing friend, did not even hear the sound.
Chapter 12. The Truth Be Known.
"Blood,"
Catti Bree muttered grimly, holding a torch and bending low over the line of droplets in the corridor, near the entryway of a small chamber.
"Could be from the goblin fight," Brunner said hopefully,
but Catti Bree shook her head.
"Still wet," she replied. "The blood from the goblin fight had be long dried by now."
"Then from them crawlers we seen," Brunner reasoned, "tearing apart the goblin bodies."
Still, Catti Bree was not convinced. Stooping low, torch held far in front of her, she went through the short doorway of the side chamber. Wulfgar clambered in behind and pushed past her as soon as the passage widened again, coming up defensively in front of the young woman. The barbarian's action did not sit well with Catti Bree. Perhaps, from Wulfgar's point of view, he was merely following a prudent course, getting his battle-ready body in front of one encumbered with a torch and whose eyes were on the floor. But Catti Bree doubted that possibility. felt that Wulfgar had come in so urgently because she had been in the lead, because of his need to protect her and stand between her and any possible danger. Proud and able, Catti Bree was more insulted than flattered, and worried. For if Wulfgar was so fearful of her safety, then he might well make a tactical mistake. The companions had survived many dangers together because each had found a niche in the band, because each had played a role complementary to the abilities of the others. Catti Bree understood clearly that a disruption of that pattern could be deadly. She pushed back ahead of Wulfgar, batting aside his arm when he held it out to block her progress. He glared at her, and she promptly returned the unyielding stare.
"What have you got in there?"
came Brunner's call, deflecting the imminent showdown. Catti Bree looked back to see the dark form of her father crouched in the low doorway, Cobblin Puent, who held the second torch, out in the corridor behind him.
"Empty,"
Wulfgar answered firmly and turned to go. Catti Bree kept on crouching and looking about, though, as much to prove the barbarian wrong as in an honest search for clues.
"Not empty,"
she corrected a moment later, and her superior tone turned Wulfgar back around and lured Brunner into the chamber. They flanked Catti Bree, who bent low over a tiny object on the floor. A crossbow quarrel, but far too small for any of the crossbows Brunner's fighters carried, or any similar weapon the companions had ever seen. Brunner picked it up in his stubby fingers, brought it close to his eyes, and studied it carefully.
"We got pixies in these tunnels?"
he asked, referring to the diminutive but cruel sprites more common to woodland settings.
"Some type of—"
Wulfgar began.
"Drow,"
Catti Bree interrupted. Wulfgar and Brunner turned on her, Wulfgar's clear eyes flashing with anger at being interrupted, but only for the moment it took him to understand the gravity of what Catti Bree had announced.
"The elf had a bow that had fit this,"
Brunner balked.
"Not Drizzt,"
Catti Bree corrected grimly.
"Other drow."
Wulfgar and Brunner screwed up their faces in obvious doubt, but Catti Bree felt certain of her guess. Many times in the past, back in Icewind Dale on the empty slopes of Kelvin's Cairn, Drizzt had told her of his homeland, had told her of the remarkable accomplishments and exotic artifacts of the Dark Elf Nation. Among those artifacts was the most favored weapon of the Dark Elves, handheld crossbows with quarrels usually tipped in poison. Wulfgar and Brunner looked to each other, each hopeful that the other would find some logic to defeat Catti Bree's grim assertions. Brunner only shrugged, tucked the quarrel away, and started for the outside passage. Wulfgar looked back to the young woman, his face flushed with concern. Neither of them spoke. Neither had to, for they both knew well the horror-filled tales of marauding dark elves. The implication seemed grave indeed, if Catti Bree's guess proved correct, if drow elves had come to Mithril Hall. There was something more in Wulfgar's expression that troubled Catti Bree, though. A possessive protectiveness that the young woman was beginning to believe would get them all in trouble. She pushed past the huge man, dipping low and exiting the chamber, leaving Wulfgar in the dark with his inner turmoil. The caravan made its slow but steady way through the tunnels. The path